Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, 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 it's Monty. Welcome to the Rockcast.
It's just stupid.
So glad you could join me for the first episode of 2016. I hope y'all had a good Christmas and New Year's. And mine was pretty good. I got some cool stuff, like Lindsay got me a new iPhone. And now I can sit around and text people all day, which means I don't have to audibly communicate with anyone.
Oh, that's good!
The sad thing about Christmas, though, is that you got all this preparation that goes into it. Like, you're setting up the tree and all the decorations, and you're running around for about a month getting everybody presents. And you got company coming to your house, and then it's just all over in one day. But if you're like me, you go, awesome, it's over with, let's get back to our lives. But then you realize, oh no, we've got New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. And so once again, you have to start running around buying snacks and drinks and figuring out what you're going to do. And this year, Lindsay was like, we're going to stay home, but we're going to play games and watch movies, and we're going to stay up till midnight if it kills us. And I was just kind of like, why? What is the big deal about the calendar changing? And yet we watched all those stupid New Year's Eve shows on TV. And from year to year, they never change. They've always got the same people on them. You get Pitbull and Fergie and that washed-up has-been Jenny McCarthy, who used to be hot, but now she isn't. And, of course, you get Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve, which doesn't have any rock on it. And as far as I know, I'm pretty sure that Dick Clark is dead. But whether he is or not, he still puts on the same lame show every year. And you have to sit through acts like Demi Lovato and One Direction, which makes it all the harder to stay awake.
And quite frankly, it's torturous.
But the worst part for me is when they do those recaps of the previous year. And I had to sit there and relive all the crap that had gone on in 2015 while they tell me what progress we made this year.
Yeah, how about that?
Really? You consider transgenders, gay marriage, and everyone being offended at everything progress? Okay. In that case, I kind of dread 2016.
Change has come to America.
But what better way to kick off the new year than to spin the big giant wheel of segments? Yeah, I don't think you heard me right. I said I'm gonna spin the wheel of segments. That's right, because as you all know, I have a big giant wheel in my house, and every now and then I like to spin it. And whatever it lands on, that's the segment that I'm gonna do. And it just adds a whole new level of excitement and unpredictability to the show, and it's fun for the whole family. And it's slowing down, and the first segment that I'm gonna do is rock news.
Ooh.
Well, it's not exactly new news, but I have to say that I was really sad to hear Lemmy from Motorhead passed away. Not only was he just a badass and such an icon in rock and roll, but he was a huge influence on me personally and my bass sound. I never met Lemmy, but I did see Motorhead a couple of times, and back in the 80s, I think it was around 87, I saw Motorhead in Houston. And they were playing this big club, and Doug Pennick and I went out to check them out. And when we got there, the place was packed out, and they were already playing. And we hadn't been there too long before we saw somebody throw a beer right into the face of Lemmy. And I'm thinking, oh my God, who would do that to Lemmy? And you could tell it pissed him off, but instead of jumping down into the crowd and starting a riot, he just said, I'd like to invite whoever threw that beer at me up on stage so I can kick your ass. And of course, there were no takers, because you knew no one had the balls to go up there and take on Lemmy. And so they just started playing again, and in between songs, they would stop, and Lemmy would just stand there and talk to the crowd. And every now and then, he would take his pick and hit one of the strings on his bass. And it was the most hellacious, distorted, evil sound ever. And when I heard that, it changed my life. Because from that point on, I was on a mission. And after that, I bought an 8-string and started trying different distortion pedals and guitar heads. And it was all with the intent of coming up with a bass sound that was as scary or scarier than Lemmy's. And so I was a big fan of his. I'm going to miss him a lot because he was punk, he was metal, he was rock and roll. In other rock news, I'm sure you've heard by now that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is finally going to induct Cheap Trick and Deep Purple. And I obviously think that's great and way overdue. Why those two bands had to wait this long is ridiculous. But before you get too excited and think that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has finally gotten it together, also being inducted, Steve Miller.
What?
I had the same reaction to that I did every time back in the 70s when I saw Steve Miller was going to be on the bill of a festival. Why? It'd be like Peter Frampton at Arrowhead Stadium with Steve Miller. Or Kansas at Royal Stadium with special guest Steve Miller. And, oh yeah, by the way, opening the show and going on before Steve Miller, Van Halen.
Oh!
And I get it, he had a few hits, but really, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Did somebody forget about Abracadabra, I Want to Reach Out and Grab Ya? That alone should have kept him out.
You're hateful.
Now, a band who should be in the Hall of Fame, but probably never will be, is Rammstein. They've sold over 27 million albums, and they've got one of the best live shows ever. And their singer just put out a solo CD called Lindemann. Let us check it out.
The first I take against depression, the second is pure energy. Black is white, all the theft was slow.
Okay, I've got good news and bad news about this Lindemann album. Unlike the Rammstein albums, which are in German, all the words in this one are in English. So for the first time, I can actually know what he's saying. Now for the bad news. Everything is in English, and for the first time, I know what he's saying.
Yeah.
The dude's pretty far out there, if you know what I mean, and if certain subjects bother you, this definitely will. So be warned. However, if you're a big Rammstein fan like I am, it's good.
That song was pretty good. Yeah, I liked it.
Spinning the giant wheel of segments once again. Why? Because my wife keeps complaining that it's taking up too much room in the house and I might as well use it. And the next segment I'm going to do is your top tens.
Yeah!
Well, good. I'm actually glad it stopped on that because the top 10 playoffs are rapidly approaching and I gotta knock some of these out. And I'm gonna start with a good one here from Keith Deering because he has sent me a list of his top 10 bassists with the most recognizable bass sound or style. Yeah, you know, I was talking about Lemmy's sound earlier. Let's see if he makes the list. And it starts out at number 10 with Tony Franklin, who I briefly met one time when he was playing with Blue Murder. And as I recall, he plays a fretless, right?
You don't know?
At number 9 is Doug Pennock from King's X.
Yeah!
You know, I've said this many times, but Doug has one of the greatest bass tones ever.
That's right.
And I've been friends with him since I was in college, and it's so cool now to see him with his own signature bass amp. And so, yeah, Doug is the man.
Oh, yeah!
At number 8 on Keith's list, it's John Taylor, and I'm assuming that's the guy from Duran Duran. Number 7 is the before-mentioned Lemmy from Motorhead. Number 6 is the God of Thunder, Gene Simmons. And number 5, Geddy Lee.
Geddy Lee, best bass player ever, come on.
Oh, Geddy Lee from Rush, of course. What a shock that he would make a top 10 list about bass players.
I am absolutely stunned.
At number 4 on Keith's list of bass players with most recognizable bass sounds or style, you can start sending me your hate emails now because it's Monty Colvin.
You cannot be serious!
Wow, well thank you very much, Keith. I do appreciate that, and I believe that's the first time I've ever finished ahead of Geddy Lee or Doug Pinnick.
Wow, you are awesome.
Coming in one spot ahead of me at number 3 is Steve Harris of Iron Maiden. Yeah, I love Steve Harris, and I also love number 2, Billy Sheehan. That guy is a bass god, and I've got to admit, when I see him play, I actually get a little depressed. My mind can't even comprehend how you could get that good on an instrument.
Just give up and realize how bug-eyed and pathetic you are.
But the cool thing about him is he's not only a virtuoso, but his bass tone just sounds like it's going to destroy the whole world. I met him a couple of times, and I went to see him when he was in Mr. Big and stood right down there in front of him. And the sound coming out of his cabinet was just
brutal!
Yeah, it was awesome. So I totally agree with you on that one, Keith. And that would leave us with one more on your list, which is number 1, Les Claypool. Well, nice job, Keith. You know, I never really liked Primus that much, but I did like your list. And you know, while I'm at it, I think I'm going to do another list, this time from Chris in Canada. And I've got a lot of Chris's that listen to the show, but this Chris is from Canada, and this is his top 10 songs he never wants to hear again. Yeah, we've all got songs that we hate because we've heard them way too many times on the radio. And this is Chris's, and it starts out at number 10 with Rocket by Def Leppard. And Chris says, I wish I was temporarily deaf when I hear these guys. Okay, Chris, apparently not a big fan of Def Leppard. But we go to number 9, and he says, any Nickelback song. You know, when it comes to Nickelback, I'm amazed. I'm amazed at how popular they are. I'm amazed how many people hate them. And because it's almost the same. If they come to your town, they're going to be playing the Enormo Dome, and it's going to be filled. But you could also fill an arena with people who just wanted to come to flip them off. And apparently Chris is one of those people because he says, just looking at Chad Kroeger's face sends me into fits of rage and I just want to stomp the smug look off of him.
Yikes.
Wow, okay. Well, Chris continues, just drop the needle anywhere on a Nickelback album and it all sounds like one long continuous song no matter where it hits randomly. Chad looks like the love child of Beaker from the Muppets and Nicolas Cage. Who the hell can take him seriously?
You're mean.
Oh, well, okay, Chris. And that's just your number 9 choice. Let's move on to 8 with Ace of Base, I Saw the Sign.
I hate it. I hate it.
Okay, here we go with some 80s stuff. Because 7 is Roxette, The Look. Number 6 is Culture Club with Chameleon.
Pop garbage.
Number 5 is Eddie Murphy with Party All the Time. Yeah, do you remember that? My girl wants to party all the time, party all the time.
Oh.
Number 4, Chris says Anything by Green Day because they suck. Well, I know what you mean, Chris. They did get overplayed quite a bit, but I kind of got to disagree because I kind of like Green Day.
Who cares what you think?
I haven't liked everything they've ever done, but for that kind of punk pop thing back in the day, I thought they were pretty good.
This is like
ramblings of a homeless person.
Moving right along, though, number three is Def Leppard with Love Bites. Yeah, I'd say we've heard that enough. Number two is The Killers with I Got Soul. And number one on Chris's list of songs he never needs to hear again, Europe with The Final Countdown. Yeah, the problem with The Final Countdown is that you can't get it out of your head. And now it's being used on these TV commercials, so you have to hear it like four or five times a day. And so now it's just like all day long, you're thinking, and, you know, nobody needs that.
Kill me!
But the other day, I did run onto a cover version of The Final Countdown on YouTube. And I don't even know the name of this band, but when I heard it, I just went, holy crap, how have I not heard of these guys before? They are like a cross between Dream Theater, Rush, and Jesus. And, well, let me just play it for you right now. Yeah, what do you think? Was I wrong, huh?
They're amazing!
Once again, spinning the giant wheel to see what the next segment is.
I'm sorry, folks. It's just this is getting old.
And you just never know where it's going to land.
I mean, it's really getting old.
And the next one I'm going to do is listener emails.
This isn't funny.
It's always good to hear from you guys, and I've got an email right here from Jason Brown, who says, "Hi, Monty, how's you?"
Oh, is that a good question?
How am I? Well, thanks for asking, Jason. I've actually been really busy, because after New Year's, I went down to Houston, Texas, to see my old friends in Galactic Cowboys. Why, you may ask? Well, I'll tell you that in a minute, but first, let me tell you about the trip.
The following story is remarkable.
I usually drive down to Houston, but this time I decided to fly. So I got up really early, and Lindsay dropped me off at the airport about 6 o'clock. And I walk in, and the lines are just a mile long. So I decide not to check my bag, and I just head straight for the gate and start going through security. And I used to fly all the time back in the 90s, but it's been a while, and man, have things changed at the airport. The TSA basically makes us feel like we're all there doing something wrong, or we're criminals, and they're kind of just dicks about it.
They're scum buckets.
And you're nervous already, because you want to make sure you don't miss your flight. But then you got to deal with these a-holes. And I walk up and hand my boarding pass to the first TSA guy. And he looks at me and mumbles something, and I think that means go ahead. So I go, okay. And he looks at me and goes, I need your ID. And so I get that out and show him, and I get past him, but then the hell is just beginning. Because then they want you to take all your shampoo and anything like that out. And you've got to place your iPod, your phone, your laptop, and everything else into these plastic bins. And so I unpack all my bags and run that through. And then they're like, sir, you've got to take that hat off and your jacket. And oh yeah, your shoes. And once they've got you almost naked, then they run you through a scanner. And there's this poor old guy in front of me. He must have been about 90 years old. And he can barely walk, and he's got a pacemaker, but they're like, you're going to have to take that belt off, sir.
I'm outraged.
Once we get past them, then everyone gets on the plane, and I had a nice flight to Houston. And Dane picked me up at the airport, and we drove over to Allen's, where we were later joined by Ben. And once we were all together, there was no other choice except to start working on some tunes.
Oh, goody!
And that's what we did for the next 4 days. And I gotta say, when we all get together like that, there's just a certain chemistry and a certain magic. And we ended up recording a couple of tunes, and it's just sounding awesome. And so we'll see where that goes, but it was a blast to hang out with those guys again. And while I was down there, Alan's in a couple other bands that play originals and covers and all that kind of stuff. And one of them is a country band, and he had a gig one night, and we went and saw him. And Alan plays bass in this country band, and as it turns out, he's great at that too. And I told his wife, Wanda, you know, this guy is so good at everything. He can play guitar or piano, and obviously he's an awesome drummer, and now he's playing bass, and he produces. Alan is just awesome at everything.
You kind of want this story just to end, don't you?
But at the end of the 4 days, it was time to go back, and Alan dropped me off at the airport. And of course, I had to go through security again. And so I walk up to the TSA agent, handing my boarding pass and my ID. And he says, oh no, you're going to have to go down there and go through pre-check. So I turn around and walk about 100 yards and start going through that whole roped off area that's kind of like a maze. And when I get to the end of it, I kid you not, the very same TSA agent is like 2 steps away. And I thought, are you freaking kidding me? You made me go through that whole maze to get right back where I started.
These are freaks, folks. These are sickos.
But, yeah, that's the way they are. And I think they just want to screw with us.
And they will squeeze your genitals.
But I finally get on the plane, and I'm the last one to board. And there's only about 1 seat left, and it's between these 2 guys. So I just sit down. And the guy sitting to my right sees my Royals hat, and he just starts talking to me about the Royals. And one thing leads to another, and he tells me, oh yeah, my daughter plays bass at the School of Rock. And I said, really? I painted the murals at the School of Rock. And we ended up having this great conversation and talked for the whole trip, like 2 hours. And when we finally land, I look at my phone to see if Lindsay's going to pick me up at the airport, and she says, I've got a flat tire, I can't make it. And so I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do, but the guy sitting next to me goes, hey, I'll take you home. And I said, well, that would be so nice of you. And the gentleman's name was Corey, and he literally dropped me off at my door, and I appreciate it so much. And so that was really cool of him, and it was good to be back home. But the next day, I knew I had to take care of that tire, so I go out first thing in the morning and jack it up. And I start taking those lug nuts off so I can put the spare tire on there. And I get all of them off except one when I realize one of them is different from all the others. And I go, what the hell is this? And it turns out it's one of those locking lug nuts. And I look in the glove compartment and in the trunk, and there's nothing to take it off with. Well, to make a long story a little shorter, I end up having a tow truck come to my house, take the car to the dealership, where they charge me $200 for the tire and $25 to put on new lug nuts.
go!
So once again, the crap just never ends, but that's how I've been, Jason.
That story failed to provoke even the slightest interest in me.
Let's see. Jason also had another comment, and he says, if GC ever does another album, he hopes we'll go back to the heaviness of the first three CDs. He says, those CDs kicked, but after that, we sadly lost it. And then he puts on one of those frowny face emojis. Well, okay, Jason, I'm sorry that we so sadly disappointed you on our last three or four albums. A lot of people like those CDs, but, you know, they probably weren't as heavy. Then again, heavy is kind of in the ear of the beholder. Because when we were on tour promoting that first album that was supposedly so heavy, we were opening for Overkill, and trust me, their fans did not think we were heavy at all. In fact, they thought we were total pussies. Every night when we went on stage and Ben was holding an acoustic guitar so we could play I'm Not Amused, they would just immediately start flipping us off and throwing stuff at us. So I guess it's whatever you're compared to. But as far as the new album, yeah, I would say it's probably going to have a lot of heavy riffs in it. But I never write trying to fit into some kind of style or genre. I just try to write good songs and see where it goes.
Oh, in other words, the world revolves all around you.
All right, got another email here from my college buddy, Stu. And he says, being a fallen Catholic himself, he enjoyed my thoughts about religion. And he went on to say, I wonder why you've rejected the organized religion stuff, but still land on the right side of politics, which in general is associated with the right-wing Christian movement.
Because he's a schmuck, that's why.
Yeah, well, Stu, I don't think you have to be a Christian in order to have common sense and disagree with what the left is trying to do to us. I also don't think you have to be religious to want capitalism, freedom, and for our government to follow the Constitution. And really what I want more than anything is for politicians, be they right or left, to just stay out of our lives and quit trying to control us.
What are you, a right-wing kook?
Stu also finds it interesting that I love rock and roll, but I've also been on the record as saying I've never done drugs or alcohol. And his question is, Monty, what are your top 10 songs that are about or reference drugs and booze? Well, Stu, that is a great idea for a top 10. I've loved rock and roll and metal and been a musician for a long time. And strangely enough, it never caused me to be a drinker or a drug user. And personally, I can listen to songs that talk about all that stuff, and it doesn't bother me. But what would be my top 10 party songs about drinking and drugging? Well, let's start out at number 10 with Hell Yeah! Drink, Drank, Drunk. Now, if there's one thing that y'all know about me by now, it's that I'm pretty weird when it comes to music.
Yeah, you are.
Some people have to be able to relate to the lyrics or somehow have a connection with the artist who's singing it, but not me. If I like the song or the band, I'm in. And they could be singing about the devil or a donut. And if it's got a catchy hook, I will probably sing along. And such is the case with party song number 9 by Hollywood Undead. It's called Everywhere I Go, and it's so vile that I can't even play you much of it at all. Yeah, and there you go.
Isn't that disgusting?
Number 8 on my list is Too Rolling Stoned by Robin Trower.
Well, that was subtle.
Yeah, he pretty much gives it away right there in the title, as does AC/DC with Have a Drink on Me, which comes in at number 7. Of course, if alcohol isn't quite strong enough for you, you might want to write a catchy tune about doing heroin, which is what Ministry did with Just One Fix that comes in at number 6. You know, that's a good example of what I'm talking about. That riff is so badass. I don't care what the words are. I will always love that song.
You've been twisted and turned over to evil.
Number 5 on my list is an old song by Styx called Light Up. And I think I first heard this when I was in high school, and I was really naive back then, and it never even dawned on me that they were talking about smoking a doob. Everybody, light up. There's nothing funny going on here.
You're smoking the pot, aren't you?
Of course, that was the 70s, and there was a lot of bands who weren't subtle about it at all. Like, remember Paul Stanley on Kiss Alive?
All right, I got a little question for all you. I want to know how many people are here that can take a taste of alcohol? And they would tell me there's a lot of you people there that like to drink vodka and orange juice.
Yeah, well, what do you expect from a band that's initials stand for Knights in Satan's Service?
Ah!
Well, what I expect is a song called Cold Gin, which comes in at number 4.
Yeah.
Number three is by an Australian band called The Pour. And you know those Aussies love to drink and party. This is called More Wine, Waiter, Please. Yeah, that song rocks. As does this one at number two. It's Andrew WK with Party Till You Puke. Finally, at number one on my list of songs about drugs or booze, it's Sick of Drugs by the Wild Hearts. There you go. There's a great song about drugs encouraging you not to do them. I guess. Either way, I love the Wild Hearts. How can you stay? Like a willow steel. giving the big, huge, gargantuan wheel one last spin. And the final segment that I'm going to do is odds and ends.
Wow, great. Who cares?
Okay, well, this is basically me talking about whatever I feel like.
Get it over with.
And the first thing I wanted to tell you about was my 8-year-old stepson is now in his third season of Pee Wee Basketball. And it's basically second and third graders running around on a basketball court with no idea as to what they're doing. And last week, his team just got slaughtered. They couldn't make any shots. They couldn't rebound. Every pass they threw got stolen. And yes, the kids on the other team are the same ages, but they somehow knew how to put the ball in the hoop. And of course, it's really frustrating for me to watch all this because I used to play the game. In fact, I've played it for most of my life, and I still get out there occasionally and shoot a few. And I thought about being a coach, but then I realized, no, I do not have the patience. Because if that would have been me coaching him last week, I would have called a timeout, brought him over to the sidelines, and said, listen, guys, I got to be honest. I know I'm not supposed to say this kind of thing to kids, but you guys suck. And while you're riding home with your parents today, I'll guarantee that they're thinking, oh my God, am I ashamed.
Is there anything especially vicious or harsh about that?
And it's not that they're bad kids. They're just all clueless and they have no talent at this point in their lives.
You're intolerant.
But it's not just me. Lindsay's sitting there and she's just as frustrated with her son. Of course, she's more concerned about the way he's dressed than anything. And when all the other kids are out there running around with shorts on, but the boy's still got his warm-up pants on, she starts going, hey, take your pants off. And I'm like, Lindsay, not too loud with that. The last thing we want is for the other parents to hear you screaming at a group of kids, hey, take your pants off. I know what you mean, but it just sounds bad. Let me leave it at that.
And I find this to be appalling.
All right, while I'm on the topic of sports, you know, I've been watching the NFL playoffs. And once again, my Kansas City Chiefs were unable to make it to the AFC Championship game. And they hadn't been to a championship game since the early 90s when Joe Montana was the quarterback. And I see him now on these pizza commercials during the games, and he looks like somebody's nerdy uncle or grandfather. And when you see him, you almost forget how awesome he was back then and how cool everybody thought he was. He was kind of like Tom Brady is now. He had the hot wife, and he never got flustered. He always seemed to come through in the clutch. And my favorite story that I've ever heard about him was when he was with the 49ers and they were playing the Cincinnati Bengals in the Super Bowl. And the 49ers were down by 3 points with 3 minutes left in the game and they had the ball on the 8-yard line. And so they had to drive the length of the field in order to win. And they're coming out of a timeout and they're huddled up and everybody's really nervous. And Joe Montana comes running out onto the field. And he gets in the huddle and his teammates are looking at him, waiting for him to give them the play. When all of a sudden, Joe just looks up into the stands and says, hey, check it out, John Candy. And his teammates are like, what? What's he talking about? But they turn around and look, and sure enough, there's John Candy sitting in the stands. Well, he then calls a play, they drive down the length of the field, he throws a touchdown pass, and the 49ers win the game.
Oh, yeah!
And that is just how cool Joe Montana used to be, my friends. And so the next time you see him on a Papa John's commercial and think, God, what a geek, just remember, he used to be awesome.
Oh, yeah, you know, whatever.
Another thing I wanted to mention is that you can always contact me through my website, MontyColvin.net, or get a hold of me on Facebook. And recently, Chad Tony did that and left me a comment on Facebook, and he said, Monty, my 10-year-old son likes Galactic Cowboys, but not King's X. Does he win a prize or something? Well, Chad, he should win a prize for being very intelligent and having very good taste.
Isn't he great?
We got compared to those guys for years, but I always thought we were just a different thing. But we did tour with them a lot, and they were always really good to us. And I'll always appreciate them for that. However, the only guy I really keep in touch with anymore is Doug. In fact, I saw him a couple of weeks ago when I was down in Houston, and we went out to eat, and had a really good time. But I haven't seen Ty or Jerry for years, and I hear Ty lives in Kansas City, but I've never seen him. And I also haven't heard a King's X album in about 15 or 20 years. But thanks for your question, Chad. And as far as your son getting a prize, well, maybe I can think of something. For example, maybe he'd like a big, gigantic wheel for his bedroom.
No one wants that.
And finally, I hate to end the show on a bummer note, but God, why is everybody dying all of a sudden? Just in the last couple weeks, besides Lemmy, you had Wayne Static's wife committing suicide. And then there was Alan Rickman. He died. And then out of nowhere, you got Grizzly Adams kicking the bucket. And not to mention Bob Denver.
No!
Yeah, Gilligan.
No!
Is dead.
No!
And of course, I'm sure we were all sad to hear that David Bowie died. And I thought, well, to pay tribute to him, maybe I should play something off of his new album. And then I thought, no.
You jerk.
Instead, I'm gonna play an old song by The Tubes.
Who?
Yeah, you remember The Tubes? They had a couple of hits back in the 80s called Talk to You Later and She's a Beauty. And I always liked them. They had a couple of albums produced by Todd Rundgren, and I'm a big fan of his. And I remembered this song called Out of the Business, which I really liked, and so I decided I'm going to close this show with that song. And I hope you like it.
I'm not going to.
Don't forget to go to my website, MontyColvin.net, and order yourself a Rockcast t-shirt. Trust me, it all goes to a good cause. My rent. you think I'm kidding, but I'm not.
Oh, my.
But that's going to do it for me for now. I will return soon, but until then, this has been Monty saying take care, don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me, and...
Rock on.
It's over.